Tom and the Dealer Family of Podcasts. That's Tommy B. I'm the SFD. This is a Super Flex Super Show. And here we go. Tommy, what are we doing this week? What are we talking about?
Reveling in the massive energy that you're bringing today, John. Thank you so much for that
just
intro.
Today?
That was awesome.
Just today.
I'll take it, man. And nice. And I'm not the only one basking in this. I brought on one of the super friends, John. I brought on somebody Indeed. Who you and I have been DMing with for really, me at least, over a year now, and you for probably much longer than that. A really bright individual with insightful strategy questions. And we've been kind of working on this roster a little bit collectively with mm-hmm. Josh captaining the ship. First and foremost, Josh, say hey to the super friends.
What's up? Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for the flattering words. I just zing you guys questions as they come to my mind. And I don't know when you get them. Could be any time of the day or night, but you answer them. And it's been a fun ride for the last little while.
Yeah. And we don't get a chance to bring on every single super friend every single week, but we wanted to take the chance in April to bring somebody on and talk through their league and talk about the strategies behind the dynamics that they're facing. And I think that's what we should do today, John. What do you think?
That sounds good to me. And I can tell you, Josh and I, we've talked late at night at times, just talking, you know, strategy, theory, stuff like that. And man, this roster that he's built, like, to me, and here's the thing, is a lot of people are probably gonna kind of dislike it, but for me, it's built like to perfection. I'm kind of finding out that my answers are starting to become disappointing to Josh, because like the big thing for me right at the moment is let's just let this thing breathe, because this roster is really pretty ready to roll. So it's going to be a fun one to talk about. And it's good to have you back, Josh. Good to actually be here with you this time as well.
Yeah, man. Let's do this.
Yeah, I think one of the fallacies in the dynasty space, or at least in how we create content, is we encourage folks to build up these massive teams and then it's roll credits. What do you do after? There is no continuation once you've climbed the mountain and mm-hmm. built a really strong team. And I think we do need to talk more about that. So Josh, what I'm going to do is I'm going to kick it to you, man. Why don't you give the listeners a little bit of context? Not so much on your team, just tell us what type of league this is, just very briefly what the scoring is like and what the general dynamics are of you and your league mates. Are there several super teams, that kind of stuff?
Sure. So it's a start 10 super flex tight end premium with a 1.5 premium. This is the third year after the startup. We did it in 2022 in the summer. And we had a couple guys right off the bat go hard for win now, mostly veterans. They rode that for the first year, and one guy has blown it up since. And we've had, I want to say, maybe two or three teams intentionally just kind of punting the last couple of years, accumulating a ton of picks. I was one of them. And right now there's three teams that are just out completely. They're rebuilding. They're not trying to win. So I think it's nine teams that seem like they're trying to all make the playoffs. So that's kind of the ecosystem we're in right now. Rosters, you guys can tell me from all the different leagues you've been in, this feels like a pretty typical league that I've been in terms of how the roster, construction is spread across the league, but a couple of real wide receiver heavy teams. I'm the quarterback team. There's actually two quarterback teams that are heavy on QBs. Tight ends are just kind of scattered around. So I would say it's not that different from what I've seen before. That's kind of the general feel right now. If there's anything else, let me know.
No, I think that's great context. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the bigger names on this roster. We're not going to get too bogged down in the names. I really want to discuss in a little bit what those names represent in terms of profiles. But at your QB room, man, you're doing pretty good. You got CJ Stroud, the assumed quarterback one overall if you follow Twitter or
KTC. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll ask where you land on that, but I certainly don't consider CJ Stroud to be my quarterback one overall.
No, I don't either.
Yeah. I mean, you've also got Kyler Murray, great super flex option. Kirk Cousins behind him as your quarterback three, and Deshaun Watson right there as well. So extremely strong at the quarterback room, right?
Yeah, that was really predicated on the whole super flex theorem, the whole idea behind this, the podcast, and what you guys both do. You do it to an extreme way, Tommy, right? And yep. John does the five, and that's what I tried to do in the startup. I kind of got it a little bit wrong. Didn't pick the best QBs that I liked, and over the last 2 years, I've just kind of recycled, primarily focusing on acquiring QBs and trades. So,
yeah, solid room, man. At running back, you're doing pretty well there too. You've got Bijan Robinson, Kyren Williams. Let's see, Devon Achane. Scrolling down this list, you've got really strong backups as well, if you want to call them that. Tony Pollard, Jaleel McLaughlin, Roshan Johnson, Javonte Williams. I mean, the list goes on and on. Tyjae Spears. It seems like you have also prioritized the running back position as well in your rebuild.
Yeah, that's kind of a little different for me. Maybe we can get into that later on, but I've been a wide receiver guy for a long time, so turning you guys on has taken some time. John will tell you just from our DMs, like, I've been a little resistant to release the hardcore feel on, like, I need to have as many wide receivers as possible, but I actually really like leaning into RBs more.
Do we have your permission to pull back the curtain a little bit? John, can you explain how you were able to convince Josh to finally convert from this crazy, you know, 15 wide receiver build into something a little bit leaner and meaner?
You know, I have to be honest. I don't totally remember. I do remember having a lot of conversations around. So when Josh and I first started talking, headed into the, like in the 2021 season, I guess it would have been 2022.
Yeah.
22. Yeah. And, you know, he was kind of, like, I had done a solo episode kind of talking about tanking for Bijan Robinson, you know, a viable strategy of guiding your team to the very bottom of the league and committing to that in the non-point scoring season and just say, this is what I'm going to do. And within the rules of your league, you score as few points as you possibly can, guide that thing to 101. Because you know that you've got kind of a difference-making running back coming in. And, you know, that part wasn't necessarily a hard sell, but once we got to the 2023 draft and, you know, Bijan Robinson was still there, but there were some good wide receivers. And I know that they were a little bit tempting. And it also just kind of felt like, okay, well, like this team is very deliberately a rebuild type of roster. Does Bijan Robinson actually make sense? You know, kind of a short-term type of value boost at a position that is scarce. But, you know, if the goal here is to rebuild for the long term, why wouldn't I go with Jackson Smith and Njigba or Jordan Addison, you know? Mm-hmm. So I remember having conversations like that. There was even, you know, there was even the possibility of, you know, why don't I take a quarterback at 101? You ended up with a ton of picks in that draft, Josh. So,
yeah.
Like, I think that you ended up with several of those guys anyways, right? Like,
Yeah. I ended up with JSN anyway, kind of in a roundabout way. Got Stroud. I chipped off Josh Allen for Stroud in like two firsts, and that worked out fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, part of the discussion at the time, it was not particularly, it was a little bit clumsy on my part, to be totally honest. But, you know, it was really kind of, you know, you spent the year tanking for Bijan Robinson. Let's not pivot off of that now. You know, like, this is the strategy that you committed to a year ago. So let's honor and respect what, you know, that version of Josh, a year younger, you know, had already decided he wanted to do. And, you know, I it ended up making a pretty big difference, I think, because it did kind of expedite the roster build from there, right? Like, you've got kind of the shorter term, again, you know, we know that there's a kind of a limited window with running backs. And so it's like, man, we need to get this thing up and running while Bijan Robinson is still in his production window.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Let's roll through the rest of these positions. We've got to address wide receiver and tight end real quick. At the wide receiver position, Tank Dell, the aforementioned Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Amari Cooper, not much else, man. Pretty, pretty lean.
Great. That's great. It was two for a while, and I grabbed another one. So, yep.
Yep. And then at tight end, I mean, headlined by the one and only Tegan Quatoriano as the tight end one.
Yes.
Closely behind, however, Mark Andrews and Kyle Pitts. So really strong at the tight end position.
Man, I don't know if that's quite as close as you think, Tommy.
Why did Dalton Schultz have to stay in Houston? Come on.
I know.
That's our first Tegan mention, I think, this non-point scoring season. We can't let that man fall to the wayside.
Yeah.
but let's talk about this. Why are you on? Why did you bring this team to us? What can we do to help you out today?
Well, I think the big question for me, and I really don't just want this to be about this roster that I have. To me, it's like, if you're going to rebuild, you don't want to do this forever. You don't want to be even 3 years. That's a long time. I did this for 2 years out of the startup. By week two, I just punted. I'm like, I'm going for Bijan. I can't compete with these super teams. Tommy, you probably would have tried to convince me to compete with the super teams, but but I didn't do that. And a year later, I'm like, so like 2 months ago, I had all these picks. I had like 7 first round picks in the next, you know, 2 draft seasons. I'm like, I'm not going to waste another year of Bijan's, you know, life and viability on a rebuild team. So let's do this now. So I think the bigger question is how to get from rebuild to contender and then keep it there, because I don't want to do this again. If this league lasts 5-10 years, I don't want to do this again for a long time. And I'm guessing super friends out there, you've rebuilt, you've dedicated a year or two of your life to just making these micro trades and taking every value advantage you can in the moment, you know, in season, off season, breaking news. You don't want to do that again. You want to win, and you want to win regularly. So how do you maintain, once you've rebuilt, a playoff team that has a good chance to win most year in and year out? That's kind of my big question.
It's a great question. John, why don't you kick it off for us? What are your thoughts on this roster? I know you said just let this thing breathe, but is this a bye week capable team in your opinion? If so, like, what are your goals moving into this phase of the non-point scoring season, which is really the rookie phase, right? It's the time of long-term development. It's not necessarily where folks are turning their attention towards contention.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing, and you know, without knowing the rest of the league, you know, my guess would be that this has to be one of the top contenders. And now again, you know, a lot of people are going to disagree. They're going to say he's taken up way too much real estate with quarterbacks. But, you know, just for me, you know, I've got kind of a list of key success indicators in my mind. And when I look at a roster, what, you know, if I'm looking at it for the first time, just kind of doing some type of analysis, or if I'm trying to decide if I want to take on an orphan, things like that, even just, you know, auditing my own rosters, I kind of go down the list and go position by position. And here's what I need to see in order for me to feel like this is a contender, you know? And so it really just kind of comes back to the flywheel, you know, quarterbacks. Do you have quarterback depth? I mean, he's got 6. And with the possibility of 7 plus, like, we didn't mention this part. He also has rookie pick 102. Like, this is just, like, he's got access to more than what he needs at quarterback. Running back, we saw, you know, got some anchors there with Bijan, Kyren Williams, you know, Devon Achane. And then we've got, significant depth as well. And it's a good mix of week one starters and week one backups who are going to shift into starting roles later in the season when he needs them. So check that box as well. The big thing in wide receiver is, you want to be somewhat young, you want threshold receivers, but my big indicator is, are they taking up too much of your depth? And if the answer is no, which in this case they're not, check that box too. And then, tight end is really kind of a luxury position, so I don't even have an indicator there. But if I did, Mark Andrews and Kyle Pitts checks whatever box you could possibly come up with, you know? So like, yeah, to me, this looks like a contending roster. And that's where I think I would kind of, I would approach it as such. And I kind of think that what that means, to rebuild means Tommy, like you've kind of really verbalized this more than most people, but rebuilding a roster means making a lot of moves. It's high volume. Like it's a lot of turnover. It's a lot of churn because you're not always going to make the best trades. But if you do enough trading that kind of in the aggregate, you end up building it up. So the big thing is to just stay active, keep it moving, keep it churning. But I think that once you get to kind of contender status, I really think you want to slow that way down. I think you want to start using some patience, and you want to start, you want to see what you have with these high value guys, rather than necessarily trying to, tier up, upgrade, try and find more production when right now there's no production to be had anyways. So, we're really just kind of looking for, I've checked all the boxes, for all the indicators. So, here in April, it looks that way. That means it's going to look that way most likely in September as well. So, I think that you kind of want to slow down and slow play and see what you've got.
I think that's a really strong point. Josh, how frequently have you been trading over the past few months?
Oh, a lot. I'm a pretty avid trader. Probably 20 since. So we close trades down from the, we have a trade deadline. We're one of those leagues. mid November, and then I'm leaning the other way, John. John just was like,
you like it?
Right? yes and no. I could go the other way though. I for sure could go the other way. And then we open them up right after the Super Bowl. Since February, I've probably made like 20 trades.
Yeah.
What have you been seeking out? What have you been giving up? Just generally.
Well, I went into this offseason with like 5 or 6 picks. I had 105, like 109, 110, 225 first, few seconds. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to, my initial goal is I'm going to sneak in the playoffs, get the 6 or 5 seed, draft some rookies. 2025 is my year. And I thought about it. I was like, if I can turn this thing into an actual contender for a few years with these picks, people love picks, I'm going to do it. And I made a few trades. I'm not sure how they'll work out, but I shipped all those picks away. All I have is 102 until I get my 2027 picks, right? And then I have just a bunch of names now that hopefully can get me there.
Yeah, I think that's a key thing we didn't really mention was you don't have picks for the next couple of years after this rookie draft. And so it is time to hit the gas. When I look at this roster, I ran it through my Excel spreadsheets, et cetera, et cetera. And I found a median outcome. You're likely to be a 9-win team. This is a heavy favorite from what I've seen based on the information that you've provided. When I see a 9-win team, I'm thinking bye weeks, right? That is my goal. Let's drastically increase our chance of getting that bye because it adds, 5 to 10%. To your chance of winning a championship. Like that cannot be undersold. And when I'm thinking about that, I'm looking at where can I get just crazy amounts of upside for current market value. I'm wondering your thoughts on CJ Stroud. Can we just start there, Josh? Is he somebody sure. that you are enamored with? Is he somebody that you would be willing to move away? What does CJ Stroud represent to you?
So I'm not much of a homer. I'm really not. I live in Ohio, Browns fan. I don't have Deshaun Watson Cooper because I'm a homer. I made a trade where I added value. I traded away Tua Tagovailoa for Watson and Cooper just because I wanted more depth. I like the Stroud Ohio fact. There's a little bit of a personalness there to me. There is a little bit of homerism, but I also like the statue quarterbacks. Like, I don't like the running quarterbacks personally. I want the guys that are going to throw for 4,000 yards and on a great year, 35 to 40 touchdowns. There's just a security in that. So I like that about Stroud. And honestly, I have thought about maybe I could flip him for something. The only way I would want to go is like a Justin Herbert, possibly a Joe Burrow, but it's just, there's not much there to go down. I don't want to go to a running quarterback. I don't want to go to a Caleb Williams. I don't want to, like, that's kind of where I would go. I wouldn't go many other places if I did move him. So,
man, I wonder how close you are right now with CJ Stroud. And regardless of what the answer is, this is as close as you're ever going to get. But I wonder how close you would be to turning CJ Stroud into Pat Mahomes.
Yeah. And what does that even take? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that the plus is probably pretty small. And if you know, in the right situation, you might do it straight up. You might get it straight up.
Yeah.
Like, again, you know, keep trade cut. For some reason, people really kind of put a lot of stock into that. The fact that they've got him as the quarterback one overall right now. It's like, I mean, if, you know, if the Pat Mahomes owner happens to be a KTC subscriber and believer, then they might be like, I mean, here's my chance to get dynasty quarterback one overall. Yeah. All I have to do is give up the best football player on the planet. and they might be willing to do that.
There's a chance I could. The guy who owns him is an Ohio guy. He's a statue quarterback guy as well.
Nice.
He doesn't have a lot of running back depth. He's got some older guys, so.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys think that's a worthwhile move. Maybe
I would look into it.
Yeah.
I mean, what I will say is if it was me, if I had Pat Mahomes, I would, even if I believed that CJ Stroud is the better asset, my response in a case like that is always going to be, there's kind of no reason for me to move laterally. You know, there's no reason to go one for one, same position, same tier. So, you know, like just to break up the inertia here, you've got to add on to it. But I mean, if he doesn't, I mean, and man, you could probably even go into it, kind of acknowledging that Stroud should come with the sweetener, you know, maybe, maybe it shouldn't be a lot, but you know, be like, Mahomes should come with the sweetener, not Stroud. You
Mahomes
know,
plus.
Mahomes in a second, a future second, something like that for Stroud, and that. First of all, obviously, you know, just kind of negotiation 101 that kind of establishes a little bit of a starting point, a baseline for us. But like, I mean, you know, because again, if I had Pat Mahomes, my response would be, yeah, like I'd love CJ Stroud. I just don't see a reason to make that move. But here's the thing, like, even if he does kind of take that perspective on it, which is, you know, that's what I would do. So it's totally reasonable. I still think that you negotiate it. I still think that you try and make that move. I think that there are kind of a lot of reasons to believe that this is CJ Stroud kind of at his ceiling.
Yep.
I mean, and I love CJ Stroud. Like I'm with you. I've been talking about this for years. Give me the pocket passers who are going to do this consistently for years to come. And we don't have to worry about them getting concussed and, you know, tearing ACLs and stuff like that. We don't have to worry about that stuff. He's just going to be there for us. And he's going to consistently give us 4,000 or 5,000 yards most seasons. I do think that the you know, and you know, just to get into to kind of player values a little bit. And there's a narrative to this as well. CJ Stroud could be in for a down season in year two. That happens pretty frequently. When you get that first year breakout from a quarterback, second year is a lot of times is kind of a down year. So, you know, it, and first of all, I would hate to see that, you know, tank your season, which I don't think it would. I mean, this is part of the beauty of quarterback extreme. One, if your top quarterback is having a down year, you've got plenty of options. You're not stuck with just whatever crap he's going to give you. But, you know, it would be a little bit of a, it would be a handicap to try and overcome your top quarterback having a down season, a sophomore slump type season. But again, like the value is going to plummet if that happens. Everyone who's saying he's quarterback one overall right now, if he does have that down season, it's, you know, we're kind of right back to late first round quarterback where Pat Mahomes never going to move, you know, basically until he retires. So like you kind of get to hedge a little bit. You kind of get to, I hate the word insulate, but you get to kind of insulate with Pat Mahomes.
The other thing I'm looking at here is Kirk Cousins and Deshaun Watson on your bench with Kyler Murray as your super flex starting option. I don't know about y'all, but I'm a little concerned about Kirk Cousins right out the gate. I'm wondering if there will be a learning curve with a new offense, with new pass catchers coming off of what really was a significant injury. And then we're not sure if Deshaun Watson has lost whatever fairy dust he had where he was creating the magic in Houston. I don't want to risk the assets on this roster coming off of a slow start at the quarterback position. I would be very inclined to move into more reliable production somewhere. And so that's one move that I would ask you, Josh. Are you interested in trying to find a way to tier up with either of those quarterbacks? Is that something that you've explored? You also have that 102. You've got a lot of really enticing ammunition to move up from the bottom of your quarterback room as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I had to right before, you know, like a week ago, and I wasn't sure on that trade. I tiered down in my mind Tua for basically Cooper and Deshaun Watson. And I felt a little bit more risky at the QB position. So yeah, I would like a little bit more perceived security there, but I wasn't sure how to just get more wide receiver depth in the offseason. And I'm an impatient guy. I'm an impatient trader. I know September is what is it, 5 months away, but I want to see my depth now. I don't want to see it in August. So that was probably where that move came from. But if there's a way to get up into a Jared Goff, into a, you know, that type of a profile, I would feel a whole lot better for sure.
John, what do you think about that?
Well, so I kind of like the getting that Cleveland stack. Not necessarily a move I would have made. You know, but like if you are going to tear down from Tua, you could do a lot worse than getting a, you know, still relatively young quarterback who has shown elite production in the past. I mean, we can tell ourselves a story with Deshaun Watson pretty easily, you know, between the rust and then, I mean, just playing with a broken throwing shoulder. Like, I would expect his production to be down a little bit with that going on before he got shut down. So, you know, there's reason to still feel okay about Deshaun Watson, I think. But like, my favorite part of this is the fact that you get that stack, because with that quarterback extreme roster where you're kind of picking on matchups, I mean, if you find a matchup where Deshaun Watson is, he's in a good spot and you expect him to score well, the most likely scenario, if that happens, is Amari Cooper gets a significant bite out of that. So, you know, so you get Cooper into your lineup as well. You double dip on the points. Like, you know, there's kind of no real downside to that. So, so I kind of like that part of it. And so I think that I would be a little bit more inclined to move Kirk Cousins before I would move Deshaun Watson for that reason. And Cousins is really kind of an enigma. I mean, like, so we're about to find out what happens. We're going to find out twice what happens when an old quarterback comes back from an Achilles injury. We haven't seen this, and not just old quarter. Like, it's like this weird blip in our evolution. Like, quarterbacks are just now growing Achilles that they can tear. Like, why haven't we seen this before? Why don't we have data on what the recovery looks like for a quarterback? We know what it's like for a running back. We know that it hinders their explosion. Stands to reason. Kirk Cousins didn't have any explosion to begin with, so who cares? You know, so it's really hard to say what we're going to get with Kirk Cousins. So again, just kind of from a risk mitigation standpoint, I would say, he probably is more valuable in people's eyes because of the weapons that he walks into. There are a lot of reasons for us to, there are a lot of causes for concern. There's some red flags. So, you know, that'd be a decent move to look into as well.
I feel like Kirk Cousins' value has gone up this offseason, yep, which is interesting to me. I wonder, I saw a trade completed the other day. It was actually the 102 and Kirk Cousins into Justin Herbert. Is that something, Josh, that you would be interested in? And what do you think about that, John?
Yeah, go for it, John.
That feels a little heavy to me. I'd love to get more Justin Herbert. The value's probably fine. I just really like what Josh has right now with the 102 and kind of the versatility of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that you can kind of take it in whatever direction you want to kind of detail your roster. So I don't think I'm ready to give that up just yet. I think I want that to get to max value and see what happens. And then, you know what, it very well might end up being that, like, the best you can do is package that with Cousins for a first, or for Herbert. But I just kind of like to play that out personally. But maybe it's not even make that big of a move just yet. You know, maybe it's a smaller move to tier back up into that Tua range, or, you know, maybe a Jordan Love, something like that. It'll be a little bit cheaper and a little bit safer.
Josh, what do you think about moving your 102 and Kirk Cousins into Justin Herbert? Is that something that you've considered doing, that type of move, moving back up into what I would consider a top 6 to 8 quarterback?
I haven't thought about that at all. And that's like, I love that you threw that out there, because I feel like I've gamed out every possible trade I could make. And here's a brand new one that I get to think about. So that initially, that feels good. I've got Herbert now, you know. Mm-hmm. I like that stability there for a long time. But at the same time, I think that the depth, whether the player of 102 or the trade value that results from whatever depth I can get from 102, I think I'd rather have the risk of Cousins post Achilles plus that than just a Justin Herbert right now. If I wasn't contending, yeah, for sure. If I'm trying to rebuild and just secure an asset, let's get rid of Cousins while we can. But I'm not sure if I get something back small. I mean, maybe, yeah, that's something I'd be more into if I could get another piece back.
One thought: everyone is assuming that 101, 102, 103 are going to go up in value post draft, post rookie draft, right? We'll have landing spots. We'll have a lot more clarity on these situations. I almost see Justin Herbert as having that exact same situation. They're not done with the pass catchers. They're probably not done with the running backs either. They're probably not done at the offensive line. He is going to have more support in a month than he does right now. And I think Justin Herbert is going to be one of the biggest risers at the quarterback position, mm-hmm, along with Kyler Murray, who you already have. So we can't craft a deal around that. But those are two quarterbacks that right now, it feels like we're on the precipice of a significant KTC value spike. Do you agree, John?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like you said, those are kind of the two most obvious names. Like, throw in Trevor Lawrence, I think that there's a reasonable chance for him to jump quite a bit higher than where he is. But it's definitely not, it's not about Herbert, you know, it's more just about kind of big picture. What could we do with this roster using 102 as kind of the leverage to finish it off? But you know, all things being equal, I'd love to have Justin Herbert. From there, like, and then we start getting philosophical between QBX and arms race from here, you know. Like, yeah. QBX says you're fine with Kirk Cousins. Arms race says, you know, you aggressively pursue Herbert.
Well, that speaks to something to me. I think you're at a point with this roster in a 12-team Superflex league where you can start to throw your weight around a little bit. You have enough value, not just at the starting positions, but you have enough depth where it's time to build an advantage somewhere. I'm not saying it has to be at quarterback. I think it might be better in this league at tight end. I think you may have really strong opportunities.
Already kind of there, right?
Like, what's that?
Already kind of there, in fact, right?
Like, yeah, we're on the way. So tell me, how did you get these elite tight ends? You have Mark Andrews and Kyle Pitts,
right? Yeah. That's a fun, I'll make a quick story. I drafted Pitts at 8th overall in a startup. 7 QBs went, and I'm like, I'm going to zig when everyone's zagging. And I took Pitts, and I took three QBs in a row after that. So he's just been on the roster for 3 years, just doing nothing. And then Andrews, I traded my win to him. That one came through John Taylor. I traded John Taylor for a hurt Andrews when I was rebuilding, essentially. So,
okay. What do you think about building up this? There? What do you think about building up this tight end room, John?
Yeah, I'm good with that. I mean, because like it feels like you really only have to make one more move to just to really establish total dominance at the position. You know,
yeah,
one more guy. It's Sam Laporta. It's Trey McBride. You could even do Travis Kelce. He's cheap enough, and there's kind of no reason to believe that his production is going to be lower than tight end 5. You know, that's kind of where the list ends of guys with the potential to be kind of top 5 tight ends, really. It's the two guys you've gotten and those three that I just listed. And it's like, I mean, if you've got 3 of the 5, that's just, to me, that's what cornering the market looks like.
So I got a question for you guys. In a roundabout way, I had 105 and I essentially traded it for Kyren Williams and Javonte Williams. And I felt okay about that. But at 105, I was eyeing, well, I could maybe triple up on tight end and get Brock Bowers in that range or trade back. And I feel like I gave that opportunity away. The only way I think I could get back into that possibility is by trading down from 102. And I did that because I wanted more stability other than Bijan at running back. I had Devon Achane, but he's a boomer bust kind of weekly guy. I wanted a guy like Kyren Williams, and I want to know your thoughts on that. Like, I feel like I forwent my ability to do that. Now I'm trying to get back into that possibly. What do you guys think?
I kind of think that the value on Brock Bowers is going to drop over the next year. Just kind of what we know about tight ends. I mean, maybe he does what Sam Laporta does. There's a reason that Sam Laporta broke records. Like, those records were, it was a fairly low bar for rookie tight ends because they don't typically produce super well in year one. And, you know, Kyle Pitts is kind of the example. I mean, although that was his best season, but context matters. Chances are Brock Bowers isn't nearly as productive as people think in year one. And I think that his price tag comes down a little bit. And I think you have a better shot at getting him, you know, in season, And you'll be in a better position to do it as well. Not just because of the price differential, but I mean, just kind of forecasting what this roster can and should do. You're going to be one of the few people who can take on a rookie who's doing absolutely nothing, and kind of be okay with that, where everybody else is like, I need production now. Like I'm struggling to just to get into the playoffs, you know? So, and whereas you'll be able to just stash him on taxi and be like, I don't need anything from him right now. I've got Andrews and Pitts. So
I would recommend that you remain active on waivers at running back. You've built yourself a small advantage at running back. That doesn't mean that you're done. Keep going at running back. I love how minimalist you've been at these positions that don't matter. And so now it's time to continue that momentum forward at the running back position. Javonte Williams is a starter until he's not, right? You've got Jaleel McLaughlin. That's great. That's a backup for the Denver Broncos. Hopefully he'll be able to fill in a spot start situation, but that doesn't mean that you can't keep finding the next Jaleel McLaughlin. I think that's a trap that a lot of folks get into in April, where they say, all right, I've got my two starting running backs. I've got my flexes full and I've got two backup running backs. I'm good to go there. That's a fallacy in my opinion. Let's just keep grinding away at that position, because I think that you can really implement a very strong QBX roster here if you just remain committed to that one principle.
So how do you do that when you have no picks, and are you trading out of veteran profiles? Are you just looking for, we only have four rounds. We don't have five rounds in a rookie draft. Are you using fab on guys that don't get drafted? How are you getting those, you know, team RB3s that ascend quickly in season?
I think it's pretty easy, to be honest with you. Just look at roster ship numbers and then attack, you know, on the back four or five spots on your bench. Attack the profiles that you believe in most, the ones with the highest draft capital or the most history of production. And sometimes you just have to guess right. This is a volume game. We're talking about 5% or less hit rates. That's not the point isn't to get them all right. The point is to get enough right where you can start to leverage the starting capability of these different positions. And it's, I would guess, John, you would agree with most of that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would maybe say it slightly different, which is that we're not necessarily trying to get them all right kind of like immediately, which is, you know, kind of what a lot of people are looking for right now, who are going to be the week one, you know, starting running backs. You know, you just kind of load up on some guys and say, at some point, this guy's going to start for, you know, a week or two, minimum, you know, like I still have a pretty heavy amount of Deuce Vaughn, you know, and Tegan Quatoriano as well. But yeah, Deuce Vaughn didn't end up doing a whole lot for us as a rookie. That's fine. That just means that his time as the starter for the Cowboys is probably coming in 2024 instead, you know? So like, you're just kind of assuming that at some point these guys are going to give you that, you know, they're going to be startable for you at some point. And you know, just, so you're just trying to get as many shots at who's going to be startable at the exact moment that I need them as possible, you know? So, it is really kind of the same overall principle. We're just kind of saying it a little different.
Yeah. I think you mentioned something really fascinating though, Josh, and it's once you have this roster set up, like how do you carry this momentum forward? I think that's a conversation that we need to have today, guys. Like, this team is good. Let's just like put it out there. This is a good team. Yeah. Now what? What are you doing, John, when you've got what you think is a dominant one or two seed? How are you maintaining that level of production while also keeping an eye on value?
Well, yeah, I haven't thought too much about this. I'll be honest, I haven't ended up in this situation that Josh is in very often, where, like, again, all the boxes are checked. Like, there's usually something missing from my rosters. Because it is kind of difficult to prioritize quarterback extreme, but still end up with this type of not only scoring potential and scoring power, but the depth at each position. Like, it's hard to get there, you know? So this is all kind of stream of consciousness, but I really think that for the most part, value starts to fade from value into production is kind of the priority. You have a balance of what you're going for. When you're rebuilding, we're really just kind of going for value, right? We're just trying to build up the value so that you can trade into whatever production you need. You're kind of collecting currency so that later you can buy utility. Well, now we're kind of to a point where all the currency is in place. Now we start looking for utility primarily. And I kind of think that, you know, it's really just kind of I think that you make some kind of minor tweaks just to ensure that the production is going to be sustainable in season. We want one more wide receiver, I think, just to make sure that you've got some depth in case somebody's hurt and somebody's on bye. I don't think that needs to be a particularly good player. I think it can be an upside guy that you can get fairly cheap. I think you can probably take some shots there. I think that you kind of load up on running back depth, keep pushing that. I think that you can kind of make some tweaks within each position a little bit, particularly, you know, we kind of talked about quarterback there. You can kind of play the value game a little bit between Stroud and Mahomes. You can kind of capitalize on the overvalue that Kirk Cousins has right at the moment. But for the most part, I don't know that value is exactly what we want to be going after with this roster. I think that we're looking for production, and we're looking for how do I make marginal differences to an already strong roster?
I'm going to say something that might cause a little contention here today.
Oh, don't do it, man.
This is a roster where I want to buy Justin Jefferson. This is a roster where it's time to put the final piece on, because there is a buy window. This is a way to maintain a contending window for the next several years to bridge us into 2027. I hate looking that far ahead, but if there is a single wide receiver that I feel good about all the way into 2027, it's Justin Jefferson. And this is the perfect buy window, y'all. Like, we have this small chance to purchase him. Looking at completed trades, it essentially takes your 102 plus a pretty strong adder. I'm wondering if we can move JSN, Tank Dell in the 102 into Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, that actually, no contention from me.
Oh, man.
I actually like that. The one, I think the one thing that I would change is just the name. Give me Ja'Marr Chase instead. Yeah. Just because he's got a little bit more upside, having never been wide receiver one overall. I'm going narrative street, the numbers butts are yelling at me right now. Tommy seems to be okay with it, but the rest of them are like, there's no reason to believe that Justin Jefferson can't be wide receiver one overall. I could give you some reasons. I'm not going to. I'm just going to say this is what. Historically, this is what happens. He's done it before. He's not going to do it again. Most likely, probability is he won't do it again. Ja'Marr Chase has not done it, and I think that he has that type of upside. Amon-Ra St. Brown would be another one to consider if Ja'Marr Chase isn't touchable. But no, I'm with you, Tommy. Like, when you get to this point, and we talk about this all the time, try and leave the quarterbacks and the running backs out of it. Try and do it with what you have at wide receiver and what you have with draft capital. But, you know, from there, just kind of once you get the threshold receivers, the goal is just to kind of upgrade them and get the best group of young wide receivers that you possibly can. So I am fully on board with that move.
If you go Ja'Marr Chase or Justin Jefferson, I love that. I think you could extend this possibly to CeeDee Lamb as well. And if you're going to go either CeeDee Lamb, I see you shaking your head over there, John. Narrative. Let me finish first.
Okay.
CeeDee Lamb is the most attainable of those three in this league, oddly enough. He's on a rebuilding team who wants to sell him for multiple assets. So.
Oh, perfect.
Oh, interesting.
If you do pursue CeeDee Lamb or Ja'Marr Chase, get the quarterback too. You've got enough ammunition where you can pair up that elite wide receiver with their quarterback over the next couple of years. Dak Prescott, he's really not that far off from Kirk Cousins. I think you could make a deal that way. Same with Joe Burrow. He's depressed right now. If I was going to tear down from CJ Stroud, he looks a lot like Joe Burrow to me, just 6 years younger. Yeah. Let's make that move. So if you make that move, that would be my compounding move to sort of further leverage a bet that you're making on a wide receiver, which we don't often recommend.
Love that. Yeah.
So that's a move that I think is doable because the guy who has Burrow has Chase. He likes the stack. And if I floated Stroud out with Tank Dell, I don't know how much else I'd have to go on top of that. Wouldn't deplete my depth a lot. I guess my question to you guys would be, is Burrow a profile that you feel very comfortable trading CJ Stroud into?
Yep. Yeah.
For me, absolutely. It is. Yeah, absolutely. A couple top six hits. The only problem is he just takes a buttload of sacks, right? And so it's an injury tolerance thing. We don't know CJ Stroud's full profile yet. It's still being revealed to us. We kind of know what Joe Burrow is. He's a very heady guy. The things he does pre-snap are just savant level. He's a genius when it comes to playing football before the snap is taken. He just takes too many sacks. And so if you're willing to accept the risk that he is a retiring quarterback at 33 as opposed to 38, that's fine with me. Like, that is so far in the future. Joe Burrow is 27, 28 years old. I have no problem over the next few years just taking the older pocket passer and tearing down with an age gap if I can get a truly elite wide receiver tacked on.
Yeah, 100%. And you're going to get plenty of sell windows out of Joe Burrow over the next 6 years, even if he does retire at 33 for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So what do you need to add on to? Let's go with the Stroud, Dell, Burrow, Chase. What do you need to add on to that? Or is that enough to get it done?
What do you think, John?
I think you're probably going to have to add to it. I wonder if you could get a second receiver thrown in and go ahead and use your 102 on this. Like, this move kind of solves a lot of problems. And so this is kind of this is the main reason that I'm like, slow play 102, wait for the draft, see what you can do with it when you get there. I mean, this is the type of move that we're looking for, is something that fixes multiple, minor gaps in your roster. So I think this would be the time to do it. See what you could get thrown in, either at wide receiver. The other thing, I mean, this is where you could start accruing some future draft capital as well. Just to have, again, some currency, that you're going to be able to use in season. It'll gain in value, and you'll be able to buy whatever it is that you need that's kind of slowing you down. You kind of put some bondo on it with a future rookie pick. So yeah, like I kind of think that this is where you get aggressive. You mash the gas and you get 102 involved.
I would consider maybe trying to include JSN in the conversation. I think his value is still reasonably high. I would be interested in maybe doing like a 3-for-2, you know, have Stroud, Dell, and JSN, and just try to get Burrow and Chase overpay because you know that this person values the stack. You're not screwing around. You're offering something that is going to look very good on KTC or really most common market calculators. Just get the deal done. You know, you're roster constructing. You're not really concerned about the value in this case because Ja'Marr Chase represents something to you that he really doesn't represent to probably any other roster in this league. You can actually gain real upside because you've addressed the other positions already. That's pretty meaningful to me. I don't want to have 16 trade offers back and forth and eventually have this deal fall through because I wouldn't include JSN.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Let me ask you guys this. Oh, go ahead, John.
Yeah, I was just going to say this is the beauty of 102 because, you know, then, you know, I mean, obviously wide receiver depth takes a hit. We're back down to two. If this deal goes through, you're down to Chase and Cooper. 102 can get you. I mean, obviously it can get you one stud rookie wide receiver if you really wanted to go that way, or if they just force you to make the pick. No one will trade with you for whatever reason. You just make the pick and you're kind of reloaded at wide receiver right there. But the other thing you can potentially do, you can trade back, get a rookie wide receiver, and then get a veteran wide receiver in that deal. You can just trade out completely 102 for two starting quality wide receivers, and now our depth is fixed. Like, there's just kind of a lot of ways that you can go about that. And that's part of why I love just kind of holding on to 102 and seeing like what gaps need to be filled here.
So as I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about strategy and prioritizing different advantages in the roster. This is the position you guys seem to care about the least, generally, I think, from as I listen to you, wide receiver. Before we were talking about having a, you know, monopoly on tight end, then there's the arms race style. When do you decide I want to invest in the top end receiver versus having some of these other positions? Because it seems like this is the one I should care about least. What's making you guys think that wide receiver one on my roster or anyone's roster is worth more than three top tight ends, a monopoly at quarterback, a ton of RB depth with a bunch of upside in the front?
I think it's a great question, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like we don't do a great job of kind of explaining our position on this. I think that's part of it. And this kind of gives us an opportunity to do that, right, Tommy?
Oh, totally. Do you want to go first, John?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm always looking to trade into the top end wide receivers. So it's not that I always just say screw wide receivers. I it's the least consequential position in terms of scoring. That's true. And really kind of in terms of value as well, just because, you know, a lot of people are overvaluing the position when there's very little difference in, you know, points per game, warp, whatever you want to use from one wide receiver to the next, kind of throughout the position. So, you know, it's not that I don't prioritize wide receivers. It's not that I don't value wide receivers. It's that I don't value wide receiver depth. I don't feel like there's any reason to take a perfectly healthy, young, productive wide receiver out of your lineup. So, you know, when I see people just going wide receiver heavy in the startup, I'm just like, you're just killing your roster right now because you just took a guy, you know, with your fifth round pick who's never going to get into your lineup, like other than like a bye week. And that is the part of it for me that the position becomes a pretty low priority. But the goal is, you know, where wide receivers can be valuable to us is the fact that they do produce, you know, similarly. And so, you know, and they kind of really just kind of settle into a career arc and just kind of maintain that for a while. And it's super valuable that we don't have to readdress that position because we've got a good young wide receiver And the better that guy is, the younger that guy is, the more job security he has, the better the quarterback he's tied to, whatever it is that we're going off of, the less likely we are to have to readdress that position. So to just have four guys, the best four guys you can possibly get, and have young guys who, you know, you're not going to have to worry about wide receiver for a long time. Even when a great wide receiver rookie class like this one comes in and you get to say, I don't need Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm good at wide receiver. So now this pick can go to somebody who actually feels like they need an upgrade at wide receiver for whatever reason. And you've got a ton of trade leverage over that person. So, you know, that's kind of the value of wide receivers. And that's what wide receivers can do for you, is just kind of solidify that position long term, so you don't have to think about it. So the better you can get at the position, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, you couldn't have said it any better, John, but I'm going to add a little bit of context from my perspective. Mm-hmm. You've already collected some of the Infinity Stones. Those are no longer available in the trade market at the other positions, right? We feel really good about your other positions. And once you accomplish that, then it's time to transition down those tiers. I just pulled up my Dynasty rostership. My number one rostered wide receiver is AJ Brown, followed by Justin Jefferson, followed by Deontay Johnson, followed by Ja'Marr Chase. So it's not that I don't like wide receivers. I love those wide receivers. I can get Deontay Johnson very cheaply, and I'm just chasing targets, right? So he's a perfect wide receiver three for me in a start three wide receiver format. The other guys I've found my way into because I have cornered the market at these other important positions, and I'm backfilling the running back position so cheaply that I don't need to invest any equity, so to speak, into that. Sometimes I'll have a real strong stud RB1, but I can find production all over those tiers up and down throughout the season, like John said earlier. Once I've gotten, you know, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, and CJ Stroud, that well is tapped. There aren't a lot of trades to be had there except for injured quarterbacks. And so what I'll do is I'll leverage my healthy quarterbacks against someone else's injured quarterbacks. But it's time to turn your attention to the wide receiver position as soon as you've done that, because those do matter. If you look at the point per game scoring potential of the top four or five guys, those really elite wide receivers, you're looking at 5 points per game or so over like the wide receiver 12. There's a huge cliff at wide receiver. The problem is once you get down to wide receiver 16 or so, they're like 1 point per game different than the wide receiver 36. There's no difference there that is meaningful. So if you can move from JSN and Tank Dell into one of these perceived very elite top guys, I think this roster is going to really be cooking. And that's how you get your buy, is by actually investing once you've built everything else up. Do you agree with that, Josh? Do you think that we're crazy on this one?
No, that brings a ton of clarity. I think that's where I've landed, is wide receiver 15 or 16 on is just take your pick. You're going to get as many 6 to 8 point weeks as you are 25 point weeks. With most of those guys, they come differently. Mm-hmm. I think I've just been uncertain on how heavily to invest in the guys that can hit, you know, wide receiver 3-2-1 on the season. And that brings some clarity to that. How do I do that, but also maintain being, you know, having top of the market on these other positions? How have you guys done that without, you know, giving too much of your advantage at quarterback or running back?
Have you seen that happen, John?
There are kind of a few ways. So another great thing about the wide receiver position is that you can really kind of move, certainly within tiers, a wide receiver, just with, you know, from one wide receiver to the next. Like there's very little value difference from one to the next for the most part. So, you know, you can kind of move into, you know, within the same tier, and, you know, in this case, just kind of hypothetically, I don't know that this is necessarily what we want to do. I kind of like the plan of pursuing Burrow and Chase, but you know, Tank Dell, I think there are kind of a lot of guys in that same tier that you can probably just get straight up, because Tank Dell feels like, you know, he's young, he broke out as a rookie, you know, he's got CJ Stroud. You know, there's kind of a lot to like about Tank Dell. People have really kind of convinced themselves that Tank Dell was the wide receiver one, you know, before Stephon Diggs came along. And like, they're pretty convinced that Nico Collins is just completely buried. And I think it's kind of the opposite. But, you know, so there's an opportunity there with Tank Dell, just kind of take advantage of, you know, market imperfections. And I think that you can get a higher upside wide receiver for Tank Dell straight up, you know, especially if, like, if you went with a slightly older guy. And then from there, I mean, you can flip that guy for, you know, for another wide receiver with, you know, probably the same basic perceived principle, but like, you just trade these guys one for one. And you end up just kind of slowly moving up, slowly upgrading at the position without people really even feeling it. Kind of like the what's the barter game? Dwight did it on The Office, where he started with like some paper clips or something like
nasty
that.
Nasty Christmas, up, yeah.
No, it was
the bean, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, like he started with some thumbtacks, I think that's what it was, and he ended up with a telescope.
Yeah.
But just by making these small trades all the way up until he's got a freaking telescope, and they traded him for magic beans. So.
Yeah.
but like, you can do that at wide receiver, and that's one of the beauties of the position.
Yeah. The elite wide receivers, in my experience, have only been purchased, at least to get on my rosters, by sending multiple first-round draft picks. And so my philosophy has been to, yes, leverage the quarterback position, like I said. So I'll trade a healthy top 12 quarterback for an injured one and a future first. And then I will also liquidate from my current wide receiver pool and running back pool in season for future draft capital. Or I'll take injured players on. I'll trade my healthy wide receiver 20 for your injured wide receiver 24, right? And I'll punt that for a year. And come next non-point scoring season, I'll liquidate the player that I took on to get to three first round picks. And then I'll trade all three first round picks for one elite player. And so it's partially about having patience, in my opinion. You've got enough assets here where if you wanted to wait and you were able to sell your Javonte Williams, let's say, for a first round pick to a middle tier contending team, I don't think that's unreasonable if he's doing well. Like, I think that's probably something that you'll be able to accomplish. And you can package that first round pick with whatever future equity you have or young enticing players you have to move into these elite profiles. But that's the only reason why I acquire draft capital, is to get some of these really elite players. I haven't seen a lot of Jamar Chases or Justin Jeffersons going for anything but just an absolute ton of draft capital. Have either of you seen any player trades for Justin Jefferson?
Not that I can think of. I mean, there are always people who will trade a quarterback for him, and like, yeah, a good quarterback. But I mean, that's bad process, right? Like, that's suboptimal. So, yeah, in terms of like a reasonable trade of players for player, I don't think I've really seen it.
You don't see a lot of Jonathan Taylor and DJ Moore for Justin Jefferson type deals. It just doesn't happen in the leagues that I'm in, at least.
Yeah. And that's kind of the tough part with wide receivers. Again, like, just right now, the paradigm is wide receiver is kind of everything, you know? And, So people can't really stomach the downgrade, the perceived downgrade from Justin Jefferson to DJ Moore, even if they're getting Jonathan Taylor in return. The reality is DJ Moore is going to score pretty similarly to Justin Jefferson once the season is all said and done. So that actually is a really good move for somebody to make. But, you know, especially if you're trying to reload a little bit or trying to retool, turning Justin Jefferson into two players who are both going to score similar to him on a weekly basis, like that's the move we should be trying to make. And then, you know, from the contender standpoint, like you can give up a little bit of extra production in order to upgrade to Justin Jefferson, but that's just not the type of move people are willing to make right now, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah. Josh, do you have maybe one more question on your mind before we get out of here today?
I was just thinking, you mentioned four names, Jefferson, Chase, Amon-Ra and Lamb. John said no Lamb. Are there any other names that are worth that kind of investment? I mean, the hype around, you know, Marvin Harrison, Nabers Adunzi maybe a little bit is pretty wild. Garrett Wilson is still there. AJ Brown is slowly becoming the afterthought of that group, I feel like. But are there any other names that are worth this type of investment at the wide receiver position?
I can think of two. One of them I don't want to say to you, though, because I know you just traded Jalen Waddle. Oh,
crap, I did.
Jalen Waddle and Devonta Smith are pretty big buys for me at the moment. Kind of worth a small overpay, I think. If CeeDee Lamb is that easily acquired in your league, I think that move is worth making. And I know that you're going to hate to hear this, Josh. This is going to be just the worst news you could possibly get. But if you trade for CeeDee Lamb, I think you immediately start looking for another trade to flip him. So there's a possibility that you go get CeeDee Lamb. You've got what it takes to get him. And then you go straight across for Jamar Chase. You know, that's another possible move. So,
sure.
I think you have to take advantage of the value, immediately start looking for the next trade.
Sure. That's good.
I like the AJ Brown mention. I still think he's got it, and he's what, 27 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm not super worried about his production moving forward. He's catching passes from his best friend. Like, they go to Disney World together. They're tied at the hip, you know, wherever one goes. I think the other is probably likely to, if something crazy happens up there in Philadelphia. And he's pretty acquirable. The only reason I haven't traded more for him this non-point scoring season is because I have way too much of him. I have like 50% exposure. But if you can get him, you know, at a tier cheaper, then absolutely that's something worth pursuing. Even if, let's say, you grabbed a Jamar Chase, I'd be willing to double down and get AJ Brown on this team. I think there's probably a path there for you.
Yeah. The other thing that I feel like you can do, we talked about this earlier about the Watson Cooper stack, you know, without putting a specific name to it, I think there's a ton of value in going and getting one of the top pass catchers, if not the top pass catcher, for each one of your quarterbacks. So you already have that with Cousins and Pitts. You've got that with Watson and Cooper. You know, in theory, you've got that with Stroud and Tank Dell. I don't think it quite works out that way, but it looks that way. And I think that, you know, there's some value in, just looking intimidating for sure. There's some psychology there, but more than anything, I love the lineup, the extra upside that you get from a lineup when you're picking on good matchups, and you're not just putting in a quarterback in a good matchup. You're also putting in a top pass catcher in a good matchup, you know? So, So that could be a move to look into as well. I don't totally know what to tell you for, as far as Kyler Murray goes just yet, but man, it sounds like it might end up being Justin Jefferson. So that's kind of the rumor.
Do we have time for one more quick question?
Yeah,
if we don't, it's okay.
Yeah.
So back to the idea of keeping a contender year in and year out. When you're set at quarterback, when you're set at tight end, you have those receivers. Running back's the position that's probably pretty frequently traded. How and when are you doing that to make sure you're not getting stuck with the Todd Gurley's of old who just hit the wall and die, you know? Or are you in season? Are you right after a big year? Are you trading for rookie picks to draft them or established guys? Are you trading for the older profiles like Aaron Jones that might have one more year left? How are you refueling that running back room to stay on top?
I think the 2017 class has really affected the dynasty market in such a profound way that it has not made it fair for future running backs from 2018 onward. It was such a legendary group of running backs where now we're so burnt by the J.K. Dobbins, by all of these running backs, CEH. I mean, there's dozens of them who we thought so highly of, and they didn't deliver to the same level, that we're seeing such a rubber banding reactionary dynasty market that is probably unfair to the production that we can expect moving forward at the position. And so I think that if we are to draft running backs moving forward in our rookie drafts, I am not seeing the same harbingers of all of these horrible outcomes. I'm willing to just sort of ride the value wave of these rookies that I'm drafting throughout their career. And like half of my running back room will look like the players that I drafted. The other half are the fringe players. And I'll just navigate between those two sets of waters and say, yeah, there's going to be a time when my running back two or three is devalued, when nobody likes him because he's got a steel plate in his foot like Najee Harris. Like, okay, whatever. I'm not rostering this guy to trade him to you, John. I'm rostering him because I want points in my RB2 spot until he gets hurt, and then I'm going to put in somebody else. Like, there's a consumability that we have to accept if we're going to invest anything in the position. And secondarily, we have to understand that the dynasty market is trending younger and younger and more fickle at the running back position. The different thing to do is to just say, I'm going to ride these waves because production tends to be predictable over a long scale, even if the value isn't suggesting that. But I want to hear what you say, John.
Yeah, I agree with all of that too. The nice thing with running back, though, is you really just kind of focus on the different segments of the season. And we talk about this all the time, so I won't beat it to death too much, but essentially, just spend the non-point scoring season just kind of making sure that you've got week one covered. Definitely a minimum of two running backs who are going to start week one, and then just kind of load up on depth from there. Just kind of that same process every non-point scoring season. I think you want to churn through the names for the most part. Devin Achane, I think, is a guy who's and really kind of Bijan Robinson until he pops all the way. Once you get that running back one overall season, then you like that's the sell high window. But those guys can be kind of longer term, like 2 to 3 years. For the most part, though, most of these guys you're going to want to it looks great right now for 2024, but by 2025, most of these guys you're going to want off of your roster. So that's kind of the big thing, keeping it fresh, because with the quarterback extreme roster build, you're pretty, the quarterback position, like you can afford a little bit of attrition at quarterback. Even if some of these guys were to retire before 2025, which we have no reason to believe that any of them would, with the possible exception of Kirk Cousins, even if they do, though, I mean, you're still going to have probably you're probably going to maintain your head count actually, because at some point Trey Lance becomes a starter, you know? So like it, where you've got like six of them plus a beat on one at 102, if you wanted, and then Trey Lance at some point, like, you know, the quarterback position isn't going anywhere for you anytime soon. Wide receiver, again, we're just kind of trying to get the guys who allow us to just kind of set it and forget it. And then all that's left to keep it fresh is to just keep churning the running backs. And and that really can be a pretty easy job. So it's interesting, man. Like, I know that we had you on, you and Tommy talked about this very same roster in season, and it was a legit rebuild, right? Like I don't think it was terrible. I think there were holes, but I don't think it was terrible. And now here we are just a few months later and talking about a juggernaut and how do we just win from now on with this? And it really is, you know, you had to put in a ton of work to get it to this point. Now you get to just kind of kick back and go into maintenance mode.
Yeah. It's amazing to me what people will do to acquire first round picks. And that's the only reason, you know, I had five or six of them. I have one of them, but now I've got a team I feel like can make a ride in December, and it's totally worth it.
Yep. Yeah, man. I can't thank you enough for sharing this team with us. And I think it led to some really interesting conversations about just how we build up our teams after we've rebuilt them. You know, what are the next steps and how are we approaching these things? So thank you for coming on today, Josh. It was really fun. It was great to catch up with you too.
Yeah. Thank you guys. This is super fun. This is an honor. It's really, really, I mean, I could keep going, but, I know people have a limit on their podcasts they can listen to. This is great to talk Dynasty in April with a few guys.
Yeah, man, it's been fun. Josh, would you be opposed to me shouting out your Twitter handle?
Sure, here? I know at this time.
Yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
So you're at Nimrod Fantasy.
That's me, yep.
And I highly recommend reaching out to Josh and talking about rebuilding, because I feel like he really kind of wrote the blueprint here.
Yep.
So, yeah, appreciate you taking the time to come on, Josh, and talk about this with us again and kind of update us on where this is at. And really just kind of appreciate the ongoing conversation that you and I have. There's been a lot of strategy that has come onto the podcast that come directly from our conversations. So it's not a one-way street at all. I get a lot out of it as well and really appreciate it. And I think I speak for Tommy on that one.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So thanks again, Josh. Let's go ahead and wrap this one up for the week. And as we do that, I ask you for a quick favor. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also subscribe to the DLF Family of Podcasts mega feed. Get access to all the great podcasts from DynastyLeagueFootball.com. Once you've subscribed to the Super Show, if you do us a huge favor and rate and review, it helps us to reach out to more people, involve more people in the conversation. From there, we can really zero in on the topics that are the most useful to you, our super friends. You can get at us on Twitter. Josh is at Nimrod Fantasy. Tommy's at FF Tommy B. I'm at Superflex Dude. And until, got way ahead of myself. Way too much to still do here. This is very important. This episode dedicated in loving memory to the late, great James the Brain Katulis. Thank you to DynastyLeagueFootball.com for the platform. Thank you to Heart and Soul Radio for the music. And above all else, thank you for listening. And until next week, stay sexy and super flexy.